Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony continues its season tomorrow evening at the PAC with a program titled Symphonic Poetry, which features music all written in the span of just over a decade in the early 20th century, from 1911 to 1924. The program focuses on French music, two works by French composers Lili Boulanger and Francis Poulenc, as well as a ballet score by Igor Stravinsky written for the Paris stage. Even the one outlier on the program, African-American composer William Grant Still, was studying with French composer Edgar Varèse at the time of his 1924 composition, Darker America. The concert will be led by guest conductor Sarah Hicks, the resident conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra's Live from Orchestra Hall series, who has helped develop innovative collaborations between the orchestra and pop performers, conducted synchronized film scores with the orchestra and for Disney, as well as guest-conducted orchestras across the country. She returns to the Tulsa Symphony after an aborted outdoor concert last fall held at One Oak Field, which was rained out. I spoke with her yesterday following her first rehearsal with the orchestra. Sarah Hicks is my guest today. Sarah Hicks, so happy to have you back with us on Studio Tulsa.
It's great to be here.
And we're looking for no rainouts at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center.
You know, I'm happy to be covered.
You know, that is such an interesting experience to have this abortive debut, a rain out at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to do, COVID. But what's that like to prepare yourself and the orchestra and then poof, no concert?
It's a little frustrating. We put a lot of work into it and it was hard to rehearse because we were very socially distanced at that point. So winds were sitting 6 feet apart and trying to play together within a section. We had adversity. So we kind of bonded as a group of people, and then we came against this situation at the ballpark. So it was frustrating, but everyone took it in stride, and it makes for a great story. So, you know, I'm kind of, it's the first time and hopefully the last time that's happened.
Right. Obviously, that you said the orchestra and you bonded. Does that make this week an easier experience in a lot of ways?
Yes, it's nice to see people again and to hark back to this funny story and to move forward from the work we did last time, to be able to know each other a little bit more, I think is really important.
This concert's a pretty interesting concert because a lot of times orchestras will have contrasting pieces. This really is a deep dive into the music of the early 20th century. I think it's little more than a decade between the earliest mm-hmm. piece written and the latest piece, 1924. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is that like to, as a conductor, where you're sort of in the same kind of groove all evening, even though it's different music?
Mm-hmm. I mean, stylistically, they do have different nuances, and it's sort of interesting to hear that. It's also interesting that the earliest piece, the Petrushka, to me feels the most sort of, not avant-garde, but sort of pushing the boundaries in a way. Although the Grant Still does too. But I have to put myself in the particular sound world of each composer, which of course they're different, even stylistically they're connected. So it's sort of a fun challenge to understand that the harmonic language is kind of similar, but each composer creates their own world and to enter into that world.
What will it be like for audiences to enjoy this music? Because there are enough differences between the pieces, but you hear a lot of the same harmonic language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You hear influences, mm-hmm. like Poulenc is obviously influenced by something like Petrushka a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Exactly. And I guess, I mean, they were all French influenced because Still was a student of Varèse, for instance. So he sort of had that more avant-garde sort of background. So yeah, I mean, they're all connected within the same 13 or 12 years, as you said. And I think it's interesting for the audience to get this survey of what was happening in that period in the world, you know, over World War One, and to enter into that little universe to see, because, you know, music is reflective of society and to see sort of the aesthetic and the environment of that time.
Should we think of this as sort of a Paris-centered concert in a way?
I think of it that way. I mean, Petrushka was premiered in Paris, like
it's Russian,
all
but
of,
it's
yeah,
French,
all of
Russian.
His, and you know, exactly. And, you know, Stravinsky spent, what, a decade in France? So very much influenced by that sound. Yeah, they're all interconnected, but I hope you hear the difference as well.
And the William Grant Still piece, it does have some French influences, even though he's bringing elements of American music mm-hmm. into this, in this particular piece, Darker America.
I would say so, definitely. And instrumentation as well, there's sort of, you think of the French style as sort of lighter and having these wonderful wind solos, and you do hear that in that piece. And I think it's really interesting. I've always wanted to do it and never had the opportunity. The only piece I've never thought about on this program is the boulanger. So it's nice to have studied something a decade ago, hoping to do it, and then being asked to do it.
How did you study this particular piece? What was the occasion?
I've always been interested in lesser represented repertoire because I think a lot of it is great. And I don't know about you, but I get tired of hearing the same 20 or so pieces. So I've always been seeking out great alternative music. I am one of the not too many people who's played the Amy Beach Gaelic Symphony, for instance, or who's conducted that. So I seek out the it's not new at all, but it's new for a lot of orchestras and audiences. And it's such an interesting sound poem that leads you on this sort of interesting episodic journey, but it all these themes come back and it creates this narrative. And I just think it's such a fabulous piece and really underplayed.
Why is it that certain pieces are like that? Because when you hear a Samuel Coleridge Taylor all of a sudden who's popular again, when you hear William Grant Still, you know, this is really good music. Was it, should I dare say, race? Was it the fact that they're trying to compare them, you know, an apple to an orange, for example? You're comparing them to Brahms or Mahler or, you know, whoever you're going to compare them to, and they're different. They're not less good.
No, they're just different. Although, as I would say, that harmonic language mirrors, you know, Petrushka. So why this difference? I mean, we know that race is an element to that, and gender. I was going to say. I mean, those are two issues that in classical music we've had to overcome. And I would say that this past 18 months during the pandemic, and also what happened in Minneapolis, where I work a lot with George Floyd, has sort of put these ideas to the fore. And I'm really excited because it lets us explore so much more music. And I think that's also enjoyable and fun because you don't have to compare it to anything. It's just empirically by itself good stuff. So I feel it's a win. It's just win-win for everyone. We get to, you know, represent these underserved composers and hear some new great music.
And you said you studied Darker America a decade or so ago. What's it like to actually conduct it in front of an orchestra? I mean,
I haven't rehearsed it yet. We're rehearsing it for the first time tonight. So I'm really thrilled to be able to hear those live sounds because, you know, when you don't conduct something, you don't know how it feels in your hands and your body, what the sound sounds like coming to you. So it's a whole learning curve. So I'm looking forward to being a part of that tonight.
Well, and this is the first rehearsal of the series as we speak today. The concert opens with Lily Boulanger's A Spring Morning, Le Matin de Printemps. And there's a companion piece there, too. It's about a beautiful evening and a spring morning. And these pieces are just lovely. You have echoes of Debussy all over the place. We know Lily's sister, Nadia, because she apparently taught every composer in the 20th century.
So true.
But Lily, who died shortly after these pieces premiered, we don't know.
I think she was 28 when she died, so young. I think she is equal to her sister and sad that she couldn't develop this art. This piece, I think, is so charming and sort of orchestrated so beautifully, and it sparkles at every moment. And it structurally makes sense as well with the slower, more sort of Debussy-like middle section compared to this really sprightly opening melody. And it was originally, I think, a violin and piano piece. And so it has that sort of solo feeling to it. And when you expand that to the orchestra, it gives a lot of different sections the opportunity to shine. So I'm really looking forward to, I've never studied that piece. So, like, you know, it's not frequently that I get to look at a new piece. So that was sort of fun for me personally, too.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, I mean, I crack open the score. I don't like to listen to too many recordings because I think that influences your own interpretation. I might listen to one recording just to get a sense, and then I'll sort of play through things at the piano and, like, structurally look at it. How's it put together? Where's the tune? You know, where are the expansive bits? Where does it end up, and how do we get there? So for me, it's looking at the story of the piece and knowing where we start and where we want to go, because I think that's the most important thing, because we want to take the audience on sort of a journey, and sometimes it's not linear, and that's fine too. But I think that makes music more exciting when you look at it in that global way.
And I think when you're looking at music from this period, oftentimes the line is fragmented. It moves around very quickly.
From one instrument to another, often in just one measure. So the colors are constantly changing, and to balance that out from a practical perspective in an orchestra is something to be mindful of, because some instruments are louder than others. And how do you make that a logical melody that's strung out over 8 bars? So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, why don't we hear a little bit of this piece? This is from a recording with the Women's Philharmonic and the music of Lily Boulanger, which will be a part of the Tulsa Symphony's program titled Symphonic Poetry, Saturday evening at 7:30 with my guest today, guest conductor Sarah Hicks, playing also music by Stravinsky, Poulenc, and William Grant Still. Here's music by Lily Boulanger. Music from Tulsa Symphony's upcoming program titled Symphonic Poetry, Saturday evening at 7:30. My guest today is guest conductor Sarah Hicks, who made her debut for just one short piece last year in a rainout at the ballpark, but no rainouts at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center this weekend. You'll be able to hear wonderful program of early 20th century centered on Paris. The next work on the program is music by Francis Poulenc, and here you really hear a Stravinsky influence. The ballet suite Les Biches, or the Doze, really has a sound of a composer that has absorbed what Stravinsky has done. Mm-hmm. A lot of neoclassicism in there, I hear, at least.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It very much sounds like, now I'm blanking on
Puccinello a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, thank you. Exactly. It really echoes that. But Poulenc also has some very characteristic harmonic turns of phrase, and they're all over there too. So when you hear them, you go, oh yeah, it's Poulenc. And that's kind of fun as well. And I think the ballet didn't really have a story. So the music itself sort of stands on its own. It doesn't need to have a story, unlike Petrushka. So it's fun to hear these individual moments. And I think Poulenc writes such lovely melodic music. And so I love that you can sort of immerse yourself in these melodies and in each movement. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well.
And interesting, because I was reading that if you actually do the whole ballet, what's in the suite are the lighter moments. And this is this is kind of, even the slow moments are not necessarily, I guess, a lot of gravitas to them, I would say.
No,
yeah,
I think
it's light and frothy.
Exactly, yeah.
But I hear the actual full ballet has those moments. There's a chorus involved.
Right, there's a chorus involved, so we can't do that. I mean, that's too many people breathing on stage. So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting that we know it one way, but when you hear it as a ballet, there's a whole different sort of response.
Exactly. But, I mean, I think it's a wise decision to keep it within the same sort of feeling and emotion so that it becomes a cohesive whole. And it's a lovely diversion. And I really enjoy it because it takes you away from life a little bit and you just become a part of the soundscape, which is melodic and light and, yeah, I guess frothy in a way.
I mean, frothy is sort of a pejorative, but I really don't mean it that way.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's nice to have a piece that's so lighthearted and sort of warm-hearted as well. So I love this piece, and I wish it were performed more often.
And it's really interesting, this period. Again, we're talking about this period from 1911 to 1924. France has just had a pandemic themselves, and yet there is this lovely, lighthearted music, and there's a lot more of that from this particular era. Do you think it was almost a counterpoint
I think
reality.
You know, yeah, I mean, art on one hand can be respond to what's happening historically in that time and reflect that. But I think, yeah, you need the counterbalance as well, because you can't be dark all the time. And you know, I think some at least great popular music has come from the pandemic era that is very upbeat. I mean, not to go too on a tangent, but Billie Eilish came up with this really happy album. And I don't know if it's pandemic related, but it's wonderful to have it in a time when there's uncertainty to have this sort of, you know, this joy and this beauty. So I support that.
Yeah, maybe that's the way it works. You know, when times are bad, you need an escape. And
you do.
Art does provide that.
Exactly.
My guest today is Sarah Hicks. You'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony in a program titled Symphonic Poetry, Saturday evening at 7:30, featuring music by Francis Poulenc. And why don't we hear a little bit of music? This is from the very beginning of the suite, and we'll get that sense of that light and frothiness. Here's music by Poulenc. That's music by Poulenc, which will be a part of the Tulsa Symphony's program Saturday evening at 7:30 with my guest today, a guest conductor, Sarah Hicks, who leads the Live at Orchestra Hall series at the Minnesota Orchestra. And before we talk about Stravinsky's Petrushka, tell us a little about this series, because you're doing a lot of everything. You're doing collaborations with pop artists.
Mm-hmm.
You're conducting film scores. You're very talented at that. And actually, you work with Disney a lot for some of their productions as well. What is the sort of impetus of Live at Orchestra Hall?
It's pretty much the non-classical offerings of the orchestra, which are many. And it's a hope to draw people into Orchestra Hall, and especially with the film work, introduce them to the incredible sounds of an orchestra. Because for many people, a film soundtrack is the first orchestral exposure they have, but they don't think of that. So when they come and see their favorite film, we just did Black Panther last week with a remarkable score by Ludwig Göransson. So it's an opportunity for people to hear the orchestra. Yes, working with artists. We actually recorded an album with rap artist Dessa, which was released 2 years ago, November of 2019, with these marvelous arrangements by Andy Thompson. And just sort of bringing different genres of music together to create a third genre, which is something different. And it's a meeting of the two, not just one plus the other. It is actually a third thing. And I find that really exciting, and so do audiences. And it's just a wide variety of music. And I really feel like orchestras, this is the future, to be able to integrate and incorporate that into their offerings, because the world needs variety, and that's how people want to hear their music.
It's really interesting how this has evolved. You know, a generation ago, when I first started playing music, every artist aspired to have a symphony set. But it really was orchestra's accompaniment. The orchestra wasn't an equal partner.
Mm-hmm.
And the orchestra usually didn't care for it.
Right.
You know, it was just a commercial enterprise.
Sure.
And what's happened now is these collaborations tend to be far more collaborative between the orchestra, a composer and arranger that brings everybody together. And it's different than what the artist normally does, but certainly seated in their artistic vision, and it also includes the orchestral vision as well.
Exactly. And I think that's important, because you do want your players to be engaged as well. And so, as you said, to your point, these new arrangements and approaches really do allow the orchestra to shine as well, not, you know, as we say, play footballs, which are just long whole notes, and you feel like a string cushion of sound and not doing anything else. But no, now there's, you know, prominent parts and rhythmic parts and melodic bits. So I think it's more fun for the orchestral musicians, which in turn allows them to perform with more gusto, which makes it more enjoyable for everyone on stage and in the audience. So again, it's a win-win.
When you conduct these programs, do you get that sense that this is something your players are completely engaged in?
Most of the time, I would say there's some outliers who, you know, think of it as that I wasn't trained to do this. But I think, you know, I have worked with younger musicians who are now in orchestras who, for instance, from the Colburn School in LA, where they have done film work and they're fantastic at it because they understand it's a part of what orchestras do now. Yeah. And it's nice to have that.
And do you think of film in an orchestra hall is here to stay? Will it be an accepted sort of part of an orchestral season from?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we're a much more visual society now, and it certainly helps to have a visual element. And again, bringing different genres, this time not even musical, it really is a film, and introducing the powerful sounds of an orchestra. And some of the music is really great, so it deserves to be heard. So yeah. I think it'll be around.
It's also interesting that you get a new sense for the composers, you know, what he's done in the film, because a lot of times the soundtrack is mixed way back in the background. Mm-hmm, and when you actually have one of these programs, you do hear the orchestration.
Yes, and some of it is remarkably difficult.
Yes, it is.
And you don't realize that if you're sitting in the movie and just focusing on the movie proper. When you, as you said, when you see people doing it, you're blown away.
Yeah. Well, the major work on this program is the music of Igor Stravinsky, Petrushka. This is an amazing score. It is really a tour de force for the. It's really almost a concerto for orchestra in many ways. Mm-hmm. Nearly every wind player has a moment that'll show up when they try to audition to be in an orchestra.
Exactly, exactly.
How do you approach this particular piece?
It's one of my pet pieces. I find it complex and such an interesting and rather dark story. It's, you know, all about kind of personal agency in a way, which seems like apropos for, you know, the climate now. But it's so colorful. And even if you don't know the story, this episodic nature and hearing sort of different sound worlds for each character. And then you have the two bustling Shrovetide fairs that bookend them. And it's extraordinary orchestral writing and sort of a precursor to like John Adams and minimalism. You have these incredible repeated murmuring figures in the background that form the basis for a lot of the outer movements. And so it does foreshadow future music. And so I find it so, I mean, The Rite of Spring was revolutionary, yes. But Petrushka is revolutionary, too, in the way it approaches that.
I've never thought of that connection between minimalism. Mm-hmm. And then once you said that, I'm thinking, well, the little piece we're going to play in a moment absolutely exemplifies that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Stravinsky was a precursor to so many things. And it's an accepted part of what we hear in classical music now, but we don't think of what where it was generated. And a lot of it comes from that extraordinary ballet music, which I think, you know, forms a huge foundation of the 20th century sound. And it's also, Petrushka's quite challenging. There's a whole bit where it's really mixed meters, as mixed as it is in The Rite of Spring. And it's a mental challenge for me and for the orchestra. And I love challenges. And it keeps me on my toes. So it's personally fulfilling to be able to do this huge musical drama with, you know, really difficult bits for the orchestra and for the conductor as well.
Well, let's hear a little bit from that first Shrovetide Fair. This is the Russian Dance, very famous music from Petrushka, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra Saturday evening at 7:30. Here's music from Igor Stravinsky's Petrushka. Thank you. music from Petrushka, which will be the featured work on the Tulsa Symphony's program Saturday evening at 7:30 with my guest today, guest conductor Sarah Hicks, who comes back to Tulsa for this concert. In our last couple of minutes, I want to ask about an initiative that you've been working on, which is mental health and music. Can you tell me what you're trying to get across about with this program that you do?
Twofold, to describe composers who sort of dealt with various mental health issues, whether it's bipolar or depression, addiction, and to show that great artists have coped with this for time immemorial and written great art. And also to say that we can use music as a tool to really examine ourselves, to find mindfulness, and to sort of find healing as well. I just think that in the past 20 months, we've all gone through PTSD, and if we can use art as a way to not just soothe ourselves, but to examine the world and to sort of look inward and see how we've changed, and I think music really helps that. And it's really important to find that stability and to take moments for self-reflection and use art to do that.
When you talk about composers that are suffering from, and listeners or people who are hearing you speak who are all suffering from the same form of illness that the composers are doing, what's the reaction?
I think a lot of people don't realize that great artists have coped with these. So I really want people to have a sense of belonging and then that they're not alone and it doesn't define who they are or what they do. I mean, it defines who they are in a sense that it's a part of them, but it doesn't need to be your whole world and that we are capable of extraordinary things. I have mental health issues myself, and it's been really important for me to use music as a way, not just of expression, but of grounding myself in the present. And I think that is the great thing about live music. It happens in the moment, and then it's gone. So you have to be there to experience it. And I hope that people use that opportunity to be present for life as it, as it moment by moment passes by.
It doesn't have to be classical music. We hope it is at times, but it can be any music.
Any music, absolutely. To really approach it as it's unfolding in front of us as we hear it. And I think that's it's wonderful. That's kind of the whole point of life, I think.
Well, we wish you great success with this program. Looking forward to hearing it. It's going to be a fun journey into Paris in the first two decades of the 20th century. Beautiful music, and we look forward to it. Sarah Hicks, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Hicks is the resident conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra's Live at Orchestra Hall series, and she'll be guest conducting the Tulsa Symphony this Saturday evening at 7:30 in a program titled Symphonic Poetry, featuring the music of Stravinsky, Poulenc, William Grant Still, and Lily Boulanger. It all takes place Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. You can learn more at tulsasymphony.org. Well, we're going to leave you with a little more of Stravinsky's score, Petrushka. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.